Well, it's good to be here. It's good to do another lesson in our series as we go through family life. And in this one, we're going to talk about shepherding our children. And we're going to go through some things. We talked about our children a little bit, but we're going to talk about specifically shepherding them in this one. And when we go to Psalm 1, it tells us that blessed is the man who walks not with the ungodly, nor sits among the scoffers. Make sure I get this right. Blessed is a man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He's like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the day of judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. And when we go through looking at Psalm 1, we see somebody described there. And I don't know, scholars argue, because that's what they do, on whether this is talking about Jesus or if this is talking about just an overall righteous man. And I don't know, but I think if it does apply to Jesus, then I think there's still some guidance for us there and that we're told to be like Jesus. So I think there's a call to righteousness that we can learn from this. And there's a pull that you see in those first few verses. You see kind of a walking, you're just going by something. And you see a standing, you're getting a little bit closer. You're a little more involved with it. You're okay being in that crowd. And then you get all the way, you full on sat down with the scoffers. And that's not what we want for our children. So how do we do that? And that's what the rest of the psalm talks about, is that we keep them away from the judgment. We keep them in God's law where they can meditate on it. And to do that, it takes some redirection. It takes some guidance. And when we think of discipline, it's not always fun. So this is our first poll. Who likes to be disciplined? There's got to be somebody that likes it. Because, I mean, the alternative is that we just stay where we're at. We don't do anything challenging to get in shape. We don't get corrected by somebody. If we are in ignorance, we stay in that ignorance unless we get some through there. And I think part of it relates to what are we thinking about when we think of discipline. Nobody likes to be embarrassed or made fun of or made to feel little, any of those things. But I think we do like some sort of training and correction. Even if we don't enjoy it at the time, I think we can all see benefit in it. And that's hard to kind of tease that out of what it looks like. And there's different descriptions the Bible gives of discipline. When some of the descriptions are given, it's really the same word as like a shepherd's crook. And you can do a lot with a shepherd's crook. Most of them had a hook on the end. So if you had a wayward sheep, you could hook them and pull them back to where they needed to go. If you're trying to get them into the pen, you at least got to get a couple headed in the right direction. You could whack them on the other end if you needed to. You can protect them by whacking down any wolves or anything coming that way. So I think that's why we see the shepherd's crook described and why we see the rod described so much. That's the idea of guiding and keeping things, our children, in this lesson, on the right track. And so maybe by the end of this, maybe we can get somebody to raise their hand that they like discipline. Hey, I already got one person. All right, well, let's go through and look at some of the things. Can somebody turn to Proverbs 29? And if you want to keep your finger in Proverbs, we're going to come there a few times. Can somebody read Proverbs 29, verse 15?
The rod of reproof gives wisdom, but a child who goes his own way brings shame to his mother.
There's a concept, and I don't know if you all have heard this. Hopefully none of you have said this. But as you have your children, bringing them up, that you don't want to give them too much guidance. You want them to kind of find their own way. So you're reluctant to give them any guardrails. The most common place I hear this is with, I would say, my peers that I grew up with, who didn't want their kids to be guided in any type of religion. They said, we want them to choose for themselves. And I don't know some of the logic behind that. I know it didn't work out for those that went that way. But I think what they meant is I don't want to teach them Christianity and have the constraints that I felt whenever I had Christianity taught to me. Because thinking of those people, if their children wanted to do something that's completely opposite of what they believe, their core values, if they wanted to become a white supremacist or something, I think they would say, no, we're not going to do that. I am going to put a guardrail there. But they were okay saying, just choose your own adventure when it comes to religion. And this verse is talking about that. A child left to himself will bring shame to his mother. Children, they're clever. I would say they're clever. I used to be one. Still one at heart, maybe. But children are not so different from us. They're clever. They can tend to be selfish. They can struggle with wanting to have their own way. They might even have a little bit of pride that they have to deal with. There's a book called Grace-Based Parenting. It was on that list of resources. And the author, he has one little interaction in there that's just hilarious. Because he talks about parents, whenever their child misbehaves, there's a temptation to ask them, why did you do that? And I think that we're all hoping that our children will look us in the eye and say, I'm sorry, I'm a sinner. And I did that because I was acting out of my own self-interest and not looking to those that are around me. Would you please extend me some grace and forgive me? And we all chuckle because we probably never had or said that whenever we got in trouble. Usually we start coming up with excuses. It was Eve. She did it. It was a serpent that did it. We like to come up with excuses and have some reason for the behavior that we did. And our kids are no different. And I think we can see that we need grace whenever we mess up. So there's certainly an element in the grace that we've received, extending that to our children as well. So appreciate Carson singing Faithful Love, because the first thing we have to consider when we talk about disciplining our children is to do it with love faithfully. They're going to continually mess up, just like we continually mess up. And when we think of the faithful love that God had for us, it can help us to be more humble. And the way that we continually correct and help and guide our children through all the things that they're going to stumble with. And that applies to our children no matter what age they are. I think it's sometimes easier to think of the behaviors we correct when they're young, but it gets even more challenging as they get older. I remember when I was working with Benevolence in Great Falls, Montana, there was a mother who had an adult daughter. She wasn't very old, maybe 20 or so. And one of the hardest calls I ever got, because the mom called the congregation and said, need to talk to whoever's doing benevolence. She talked to me and told the whole story. And she said, my daughter has just left Helena, and she was trying to get support from the congregations there. She had received some, but the mother had called and said, I need you to stop helping my daughter. And so they did. And so she'd found her way up to Great Falls. And so this mom was calling the Churches of Christ and anywhere else that she thought her daughter might go, saying, my daughter's going to come to you and ask for help. And what I need you to do is not help her. Because she's like the prodigal son who's running, who hasn't hit bottom yet. And I thought, how hard of a call for a mom to call towns and say, don't help my daughter. She's got to be able to hit bottom before she comes back. But that's the love that the mother had for her daughter, of continuing to try and guide her and get her on a right path, even into her young adult years. So not saying it's going to be easy, but it's important. So let's look at a couple verses with that. Let's go 1 Chronicles 16:34. I think this is the verse the song is based on. 1 Chronicles 16:34. Right? So I think that's probably easy for us to think of in the abstract. We know that God's faithful love endures forever, and we know that we're going to love our children forever. But it can be hard whenever they're getting on our nerves. So that faithful love applies all the time. And I would say it's most important whenever we are frustrated, maybe whenever something has been broken, whether it's a relationship, something physical, keepsake, all of those things can make it super hard, and that's whenever this is most important. Because if you look at the context for the times through the Psalms and here in First Chronicles, whenever we hear of God being faithful, it's whenever Israel's not being faithful. And so it's whenever our children are misbehaving most that it's most important for us to be faithful and show them love. So it was always fun. We're at finals week here for a lot of our students. One of my favorite formats for class is whenever the teacher would give an assignment, and then we would finish class early and we would go through the assignment together. So I'm going to give you that little ray of hope that that might happen, but I'll go ahead and give you your homework. It's to read the account of what we usually call the prodigal son. So you got Luke 15. You can read all of it to get the context of where the parable is set, but verses 11 to 24 are the parable proper. Do it and then listen or sing or get a book and go through Faithful Love. Kind of read all four verses and then read the prodigal son. And you will see the faithful love of the Father through that. And there's so many things you can learn from that parable. So the teaser is, if we get through all the material, we'll do that at the end of class. There's a chance that'll happen. Small chance. All right, so we have unfailing love, always for our children. And I think that'll motivate us to want better for them and help to guide them in all the ways that we can, with their behaviors, with their compassion and care that they'll have for other people. And to do that, sometimes unconditional love takes discipline. So can somebody turn to Proverbs 13, verse 24. Proverbs 13, 24.
Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves it is diligent in discipline.
So if we are disciplining, it's a way of showing love. Again, there's a concept that sometimes we have is that we don't want to discipline our children because we don't want them to be upset with us. Maybe we want them to like us. All of those things, we don't want to appear unloving. But to leave somebody to their own devices is a way of showing them apathy. And that apathy here is described as hating. And it's that you are not wanting the best for your children if you just leave them to their own devices. And so it takes active, diligent discipline for it to be effective. That's that idea of the shepherd's crook guiding them. While we're there in Proverbs, let's go over to chapter 19 and read verse 18.
Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't want that. Discipline them while there's hope. There are certain things that are easier to correct at different ages, and we don't want to miss those windows. There are going to be some things that we've missed that we don't give up on. So even though you might have missed the ideal time, don't give up. Discipline them while there's still hope. Don't be intent on killing them. It's appropriate to think of what is the moral intent for the correction that we're giving our children. We had the example in earlier lesson that it matters what the intent is behind what our children are doing. And I think that's probably easier to tell when they're younger, but it's probably still something we can discern as they get older. Are they doing this out of selfishness, out of defiance, willful intent, or was it just an accident? And as they get older, there's probably no end to the examples that could happen with a vehicle. Lots of ways to have an accident. You have an accident, just happened, nothing that you could do. You could have an accident because you weren't where you were supposed to be doing what you were supposed to be doing. You could have an accident from driving faster or later or where you shouldn't be, all those things. And that matters a lot in how you respond to the situation and the discipline that goes with it. And those things can be hard but important to work through. All right, we're still in Proverbs. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 3, verse 12. Yeah, that goes to all of us. If we get a discipline, If we get a correction from God, it's because he cares for us. He wants what's best for us in doing righteousness and bringing him holiness. All of those things are helping us to grow into the people that he's called us to be. And to do that, take some correction along the way, both for us, and then that verse directly connects it to our responsibility to do that for our children as well. We see that same sentiment echoed in Hebrews 12:6, in Revelation 3:19, and a few times in Psalm, but Psalm 94:10 through 13 is one. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 12. Can somebody read verses 5 through 7? Hebrews 12, verses 5 through 7.
And you've forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you're reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons, for what son is there whom his father does not discipline?
Thanks. This passage includes an acknowledgement that our faith will be accompanied with discipline. That goes right with it. So as our children, same thing, as they grow in faith, we both teach them to expect discipline, and then we model for them a proper discipline, a way to guide them and help push them into a good path that will keep them going in a faithful direction. It doesn't mean that it's always going to be easy. There's passages that tell us that when we are enduring the suffering, we don't rejoice in the suffering in and of itself. We just rejoice that we are counted worthy to be able to go through that suffering and that correction. We got 2 Timothy 3:16 through 17. Does anybody have that one memorized or want to read it? 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17.
Scripture is inspired by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be adequate, equipped for every good work.
Thanks. Yeah, that's what we want, is to equip ourselves and our children for every good work that's coming their way. All right, let's read a couple more passages talking about this. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. Ephesians 6, verse 4.
Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in discipline and instruction of the Lord.
Yeah, absolutely. I would just say don't do that. Sometimes it's tempting to provoke our children. Hopefully we can see whenever it's starting to frustrate them in any way and be able to show them the encouragement that they need, because it can be discouraging. I don't know. Hopefully it doesn't happen. I don't know that I've seen it here. I probably see it in the world where there is a tendency to not lift up our children. I have heard it in the church that somebody did not like to tell their children good job or give them any praise, and their philosophy for doing that was the verse about us being a faithful servant. And whenever we've done that, we don't expect to be served first. We're just told, you did your work as a servant. That's what was expected. And I don't know that that's taking that verse in the correct context. Our children need encouragement. And we see that we are encouraged ourselves all throughout the Bible. We are to be faithful servants. We are to serve without expecting to receive accolades. But it is something that God does tell us, that we have a promised reward. So I think there's benefit and there's a need to encourage our children. And as the verse says, don't provoke them. Yeah, absolutely.
I know this seems cliche, but you need a relationship mm-hmm. with your kids before you discipline. And I'm going to give an example with my grandkids because I don't remember if I did that well with my kids or not. But they're faithful members. A lot of theological discussions, as I did today with one of my daughters, but with my grandchildren, I found that when you play with them on their level, whether it's basketball, whether it's swimming, yesterday or the other day at the park with my 7-year-old grandson, we were playing on all the gym stuff. It's like a spaceship, and you could fly right across the things. And if we fail, we fell into the lava, then we were dead. And we got two lives, you know. Yeah. We just play, you know.
Floor is lava. You gotta watch out.
We invited a friend over, and he started playing, and we were just playing these games. And so I found, whatever it is, doing stuff with them. And I'm not around as much, obviously, as the parents. And when I discipline, if I don't have a relationship with them, they don't want to listen. But I have a really good relationship with them. So when I do discipline, they're like, I'm listening.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Because I have a relationship with you. You know, I'm not on your case all the time. I want to hang out with you. I want to play with you. I want to do things with you. But when it's time for discipline, I'm going to tell you. And they're more accepting of it when they know, oh, we've got a relationship here. You know?
Yeah.
And there's things that are good about this relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. There's at least a few bits of wisdom in there that are worth clarifying. One is to have that relationship, you have to be able to involve those that are around you. So as we're parenting our children, we don't want to bring them into isolation, keep them away from grandparents and other people in the congregation. All those things, we need those healthy relationships that come from being a church family. And then our physical family as well. So you have to have an opportunity for those relationships to flourish. I can remember all sorts of people that I was around growing up that I knew to varying degrees. If somebody I didn't know just told me something in passing, I don't even remember those along the way. But for those adults that I respected, that I looked up to, that I had a relationship with, whenever they would tell me something, it meant a lot to me. So all the different interactions that we have with people, absolutely. They can matter a lot.
Well, I've been doing this for 13 years, but I think as human beings, we just stink at balance. We're not good at balance. That's why our body maintains a homeostatic balance automatically, and heart rate and all those other things, because we're not good at balance. Somewhere in between coddling and grinding them down, somewhere between every one of my children's going to be a professional athlete and they can do no wrong, or the mom or dad where it's just never good at, like, somehow we just can't find that balance, or it's hard to find that balance. And so one of the things I've tried to learn or try to do, and it's easy to say, is when I discipline, try to take the anger out of it. You're still going to get that wooden spoon, because A equals B, but daddy's not going to come in there and yell at you like you're another man. You know, when I'm doing it, I'm just going to applaud you. This is what's going on.
Yeah.
And I try to make sure that there's a balance between getting the affection, the love, right, the affirmation, but also providing the boundaries of the discipline.
Yeah.
I think that's basic. But
yeah, that's a golden bit. Don't discipline in anger. Usually when you discipline in anger, you're going to regret it later. And if you do it correctly, the response is you come back and you apologize to your children. We don't have to think that we have it so correct that we never apologize to our children for, hey, I messed up on this one. Oh, please forgive me.
Thinking about too, because he says don't provoke your children to wrath. But if my observations are correct, there's at least two ways to do that. And one is with an overabundance of control. You don't let your kids do anything.
Yep.
And they get really frustrated with that. You don't let them make any decisions. You don't let them play anything that's dangerous. That kind of control. And then there's the other, where you don't have any control. You're lax, and so they don't know what to expect, and they don't know where the boundaries are. And if you don't know where the boundaries are, it's scary. And when you get scared, you get angry. And that's what he's talking about wrath. And he didn't. It's almost, I don't want to say it's frustrating, because the Holy Spirit told Paul what to write, but it's frustrating that he didn't make more commentary about that. I need another verse. I say that a lot.
Right.
But you have to think about it, and it, my experience has said there's two ways to provoke children to wrath. Under disciplining and over disciplining, if I can put it in the simplest terms.
Yeah, and we're given examples of it. So think of Psalm 23. Does anybody know the first couple lines of Psalm 23? The Lord is my shepherd. Okay, and then? Yeah, it makes me lie down in green pastures. I think that's part of the discipline. So visualize a shepherd. He's got his sheep there. We can do a couple things with them. We can not care for them at all, which is just send them out there. Hopefully they come back when it's time for shearing. Never go check on them, never do anything. That's not helpful. A sheep that's just letting it get eaten with our children, that's going to make them all sorts of things. Distant, because they're away. It can make them angry. It can provoke them to anger because they're not getting any of the love and affection, attention they need. What's the converse of that? We take our sheep and we just hold it right there. We never actually let it go anywhere. We just hold it. At that point, we're actually starving it because we've not giving it any latitude to go do anything. And that's why I love Psalm 23 when we think about it as discipline. Let them go out in the pasture. Let them find it. Let them see all the things that they need to do as you're keeping an eye on them and keeping them safe from the things that are around there.
He does start this with the passage we read about where it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right.
Mm-hmm.
We all understand what that says, but how do you implement that? You take your Bible to your two-year-old and now, here, Henry, you read this. That's not going to work.
Right.
That's not what's intended. It's like God is saying through Jesus Apostle, you parents, you have the authority to enforce obedience on your children. You have the authority to train them to be obedient. What's the first commandment with promise? This one right here. You want a long life? You want your kids to live a long time?
Right.
Teach them to obey your authority. And one of the things I've learned as parents is, forget trying to be anybody's friend. Respect is a whole lot more important than love. You might think you're going to do something that's going to keep them from loving you. Well, you won't. But you got to do what will cause them to respect you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's spot on. Yes?
Just thinking of Ephesians 6:4 verse, the second half of it, although it's not specific, the second half of that verse tells you of that balance. It tells you what if you don't want to provoke them, then do it this way.
Right, that discipline,
yeah,
instruction.
Well, discipline of the Lord, instruction of the Lord. So that, to me, that speaks more of the parents' relationship and understanding of who God is and who God shows himself to be throughout the Bible. So I wish that when I was starting to raise my children, 20 years ago, that maybe my relationship and my understanding of who God was better. I understand better now who he is, and so I guess that's where the grace comes in, or
right.
God's help along the way. But I mean, the parents' relation, I guess my relationship with who God is and how he disciplines his children and how he instructs his children is a great example of how
absolutely
I need to instruct my children so that they are not provoked. So the answer is all right there.
Right.
I mean, it's not specific, but for that, if you want to be specific, you've got to study and spend time with God and learn who he is.
Right. Yeah, I think I saw Paul first. We're going to Colossians 3:21 next. Paul?
One simple lesson, I start teaching them at 4 and 5 and they understand it. And they get more understanding as they get older, but it's just as applicable. I'm trying to teach them, daddy and mommy's job is to make you independent so that you can be out on your own, make good decisions. There's a rope tied to you, and I'm holding it. Better your choices are, the more rope you go. Your choice. You get more rope if I know that you can make good choices when I'm not there. If you can't make good choices even when I'm here, we're going to pull that rope back. So it's on you. You get to make a decision. Faithful in little, faithful in big. Like, there's plenty of lessons that work into that. But that abstract lesson seems very easy for them to understand.
Okay. Yeah. All right, can somebody read Colossians 3:21?
Fathers, do not antagonize your children so that they will not become discouraged.
Yeah, that goes into the balance. We don't want them to become discouraged. Our goal is not to beat our children down, to subdue them with our might in our intellect, all those things, in a way that they become discouraged. We are trying to guide them in a path that will help them to grow in faithfulness and all those things that they're called to do. So, yeah, absolutely.
320 also gives instruction, gives direction.
Okay. You want to read that?
Children, to be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. If children are going to obey their parents need to give a plan or strategy for how they intended to be raised, what their objectives are for them. That's pretty important. I think you don't ever... I've never had the idea that I'm just going to let them go and do what they want to do. That's never part of our life.
Right.
We've had four children, and ever since we got started, Jane's the influencer in our whole family. She got me started, too. But our plan was we always took our children to worship and study, sometimes at home. We had Bible studies at home. And we had one guy that was, when we went to the east side, forgot his name, that was a preacher, and he would like quote, maybe 100 scriptures during the service.
Mm-hmm.
And our boys would sit down there pretty close to the front, and they had books, and they'd write them down so they knew exactly what he was.
Right.
You know? So there's an important aspect. If you want your children to be faithful Christians, I think you really got to, that's got to be part of your life, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's really got to be strong.
Yeah.
And husbands and wives work together. It can't be just mom or dad. We always had a rule at our house that the kids always did what mama told them to do. They don't ever disobey mom. If they did,
right,
they're in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess that may be overstated. I don't know. That's the kind of way we did that. But children need to learn, and they need to have the criteria laid out for them to help develop that, I think.
Yeah. I remember hearing a preacher once, I don't know if it's a true story or not, preacher stories, but he attributed the life that he was able to live because he had a drug problem when he was a toddler. His parents drug him to service twice on Sunday, on Wednesday, and on Monday, and then they go to Bible studies and visitations, and he got drug everywhere as a toddler, and that was just the norm for them. And as they grew older, it wasn't a battle later on because they'd established it of, this is who we are, and this is what we're doing. Larry?
One time my wife was seeing a young boy taken out of the church to be disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
And as he was leaving, he reached back inside the door and he said, "Y'all, pray for me."
See, kids are clever. So as we think of discipline, in the example that we have to talk about Matthew chapter 7. And so if you all know what happens at the beginning in Matthew chapter 7, this is the whole description of removing the plank from our own eye. And if you read that section all the way through, it's so that we can clearly help others. And so there was a recent engagement where they were talking about parenting. How do you guide your teenage children on social media? And one of the speakers said, well, really, you just don't need to be on it. That's not going to be healthy. So his recommendation was just get your teenagers off social media. And then the other person responds, and get off of it yourself. And so that's kind of the concern that we have here. If we know something is really damaging for our children, maybe we need to look and see if that's damaging for us as well. And there's all sorts of things that we can apply to. Social media is an easy target through this whole course. But you could probably think of anything. What is it that I'm struggling with, but that I am not fixing, but expecting my children to fix? And so I think that Matthew 7 applies to us. And Proverbs 5, Psalm 50, all of those things I think are talking to adults as they describe, don't hate instruction. We got to be willing to receive instruction ourselves. So we'll have that as a kind of a whole nother lesson as well as we talk about adults with advice. But there's a bit of a humorous but a serious irony that we would yell at a child to stop yelling at their sibling. So sometimes we do have to take a moment and say, all right, what do we need to do that we're modeling ourselves that our children are going to do? We've got two of our kids here, so this is interesting. But some of the habits that we look at in our kids and we're like, ooh, that might not be the best habit. It's a bad habit that they've picked up from us on some of the things. And so, yeah, very convicting whenever we see our children grow into young adults and the things that we all need to work on, that we get to interact with one another on. So now we get to talk about it on the way home. What are we talking about? That'll be fun. All right, so as our children mature, there's all sorts of different things that they're going to need, and we'll have to keep growing in what we're able to do and how we're able to interact with our children to make it most effective for where they're at. I had a professor once that gave the analogy that building a personality in anybody's kind of like putting bricks on a wall. There's all sorts of things that go into it, and that's the interactions that we have with those that we know around us. They're little nuggets that we kind of pick up along the way, or little bricks in a wall, whatever analogy that you can think of. And we want to guide our children through that process and to be mindful about what it is that's building them into who they're being, their character. There's a phrase that some people have said that more is caught than taught. That goes into the idea of living as an example. But that's not the only thing. There is a lot that's taught as well. So you think of our children and when we learn a language. We learn English, more or less. I mean, we are in Oklahoma. We learn mostly English just from picking it up from those that are around us. But we don't just... Indignant. I'm from Arkansas, so it's fine. Thank you. So more or less, we pick up English just from those that are around us. But we don't pick up a second language unless we're immersed in it. Then we can start to pick it up. For the most part, anybody who's learned a second language had to put some effort into it. They had to sit down, be taught, learn on their own, all of those things. And that's how a lot of our instruction with our children goes. If we want them just to pick up what's around us, we don't have to do a whole lot. They're just going to pick up everything in the world around them. And then they're going to go off and have all the consequences from that. But if we want them to be on a very particular path, if we want them to walk faithfully, think of it more like learning a second language. There's some diligence that's needed there and some guidance to go about learning that second language and learning to live differently. So there's a model that I've been thinking about. I've never really done anything with it. I haven't written it down, but I'll share it with you all today. And if it's helpful, you can keep it. But if not, just throw it in the bin where you've thrown other analogies that I had that may not have been helpful. But the model is there's kind of three different modes that we can go into with parenting. When I first started thinking about this, I said three different types of parents. And I don't think that's fair, because I think we probably slip in and out of different modes, depending on how we're doing and what we're thinking at the moment. But the first one, I would say, is containing. Hopefully nobody's in this mode very often, but sometimes you have to be. That's whenever you got eight kids running all different directions, and you got to gather them up real quick before they're gone. So you're not really doing a lot of thinking about their future life at that moment. You're just trying to contain them at that moment. But you can't do that forever. If you do that for too long, really you get into the mindset of, I'm just stuck with this kid until they're 18 and then they're out. And that's not a healthy attitude. I remember sitting at a dentist's office once. And so I'm sitting there minding my own business, pretending to read something. So I don't have to make eye contact with anybody. And then there's a lady across the way, and she got a phone call. And so she yells at somebody for a little bit, and then she hangs up. And then she looks up at me, just assumed that I wanted to hear the story. So she told me the story. It was a call from the school, and they wanted her to come pick up her son who was acting up. And her comment to me was, I'm not going to come pick him up. I've got to deal with him all day long. From 8 to 4, he's their problem. And that's the mindset of a container. She was doing the bare minimum of trying to get this child to not break anything and then out of the house at 18. And any time that he was at school, they got to deal with him. I don't want to deal with him. So that's kind of the mindset of containing. Everything from just protecting him at the moment to trying to get him out of the house. That's where we don't want to be. The second one is maintaining. I like the alliteration as well. Containing, maintaining. This is where just about all of us are all the time. This is what we think of when we think of raising children. We're taking them to all the activities they got to go to. We're making sure they're fed, make sure they do their homework. That is just getting them through all the things that we want to do. Most kids are going to turn out just fine if we go through maintaining, because we're doing the best we can, and we're putting some thought into it, all of that. I would say vast majority of us are going to be in that the vast majority of the time. And the third one, then, I would call it ordaining. This is where you sit down and purposely have some thought for your child for the future. You think that these are their talents. This is what they're really good at. Maybe we can help to talk about them going into this. Maybe we can talk about the relationships they have with these people as they develop them. And that one's probably the one that is least natural for us. Because it takes some foresight. It takes the relationships of getting to know all of our children and then seeing and praying through what purpose would God have for them. So lots of prayer involved in that last one. And we probably slip in and out of those as we go through the different scenarios that we find ourselves. All right. What thoughts do you have? I know you had some thoughts. No, go ahead.
Hebrews 5:8.
Yeah, I just mentioned Hebrews 5. We didn't go to it. Let's go ahead and read it.
I'm figuring if the Son of God needed to learn obedience through discipline himself, and obviously we do and our children do too. I mean, not to reiterate everything. I mean, I think we all agree that we need to discipline our children.
Right.
But I think it's worthy of note that even the Son of God needed to be disciplined to become obedient. I won't go through the whole context. I'll just read the verse because it's about him. Although he was a son, he learned obedience from the things which he suffered. So if he had to suffer to learn obedience to do to the Father's will perfectly, and obviously we do it in our children as well.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Yes.
I think as a society, we are not done well in our society. These relationships, especially from the standpoint of parents having authority. And when we advocate our authority to deal with those kids, then they learn to disrespect authority in different levels of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we read about some of them too.
Yep. Yep, there's examples that we can find in the Old Testament as well of people looking to the wrong authority, looking for their guidance elsewhere. And yeah, we see that today. Parents are responsible. It is our job to guide our children. That's not something that we can outsource or that we should be outsourcing. All right, one more element that I want to try and get through. It comes from really Matthew chapter 23. Jesus is giving the most intelligent Bible scholars at the time, I guess a lashing as they go through it. And so this is often called the woes. And so one of the woes that he gives them is, hey, you all have missed it. You all are able to follow the smallest elements of the law, but you miss some of the weightier matters of the law. And I think there's a lesson for us as we interact in our children there. We want to teach them to do right. And there's a phrase I have, again, may or may not be helpful, but it's the idea that if we're thinking simply, we would say the simple know pain and pleasure. The intelligent can learn right and wrong. That's what we're hoping. Children can learn right and wrong. And then the godly can see and discern righteousness and faithfulness. So that's another level, I would say, above just right and wrong. And when we look at Matthew chapter 23, he's telling the scholars, you've got right and wrong figured out. But what you've missed is the weightier matters of the law. So an important thing to teach our children, maybe one of the hardest things, is when to not follow guidance from somebody else. When to break a rule. And so the example that's pretty easy is if you come up to an intersection, our kids should be stopping at red lights. We don't want our kids running red lights. That's wrong. Don't do that. But if you come up to a red light and maybe there's an accident on the side, maybe there's something going on, and there's a police officer standing in the middle and he is waving you through, they get terribly frustrated if you just wait at the red light whenever they're waving you through. So at that moment, what the police officer is doing is overriding the light that's going through there. So you don't look at that and say, ah, I got a loophole. I'm going to run all the red lights now. Because there's a scenario when I do run the red lights. What we got to do is teach our kids discernment of, yes, please obey your teachers. That is important. You should listen to your teachers. Unless there's this situation, kind of that situation, through there. Whatever it happens to be, speed limits, all the driving analogies that you can think of. The harder ones is whenever we're taught right and wrong from those that are around us. Yes, listen to those that give you advice, to your elders, Bible teachers, all of that. You have to know the Bible as well. And then know that this is whenever you're not going to follow somebody in that situation. And then being able to, hopefully, get them to communicate in love for some reason, or the reason why they're not going to be able to follow that and what they are following. And so if anybody's mastered how to do that, let us know. But I think that's probably one of the hardest things, even for us to think about. We don't disobey the laws of the land. We follow those. But sometimes it's easiest for to rationalize something that's out of convenience that we're going to do. Speeding, taxes, all sorts of things that we can be concerned with, instead of thinking about, all right, because of righteousness, I'm going to do this versus that, and having a way to communicate that. Any thoughts? Concerns?
So one example that we've kind of faced in that, specifically with our kids in the school that they go to, it is a private Christian school, but it is a Baptist school. Mm-hmm. Private Christian school, and so we equip them right away with scriptures when it pertains to baptism. And so what we tell them is, you don't need to start that battle. You don't need to, you know, make a placard and go down the hallway and draw attention to yourself. But if, especially a teacher, then you have the right to conflict. Yeah. You have the right. You have to do it politely. And if they tell you to stop, well, then you do have to stop, and we can circle back around with them, and we get, Daddy will come talk to the teacher, and no problems with that. They don't want that. But that situation, and she's faced, Allison's faced that recently, and I wish I had the video, because it was a special guest speaker that came in. I'm bragging now about that moment. We could take much more time going over the list of things that I mess up on a regular, but every once in a while, we get it right.
Yeah, that's
and amazing. One of the other teachers, who is a Christian herself, a Church of Christ, was saying, man, you would have been proud of her. She basically just the guest speaker, full-grown woman who came to speak. She's known within Baptist churches and all that stuff. Couldn't give an answer from one scripture, one debate, one other thing that Allison protested in front of her whole class. So it is, my point is, it's possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a quote by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and it's talking about live not by lies. And there are plenty of things that we can get into a battle about. And his quote is, you don't have to go out picking battles, but you don't want to tell lies. So if we kind of make that the floor of, you don't go looking for the battles, but whenever there's a discussion that comes up, you say the truth. And living by the truth makes a huge difference for being a light. All right, let's say a prayer, and then we'll finish. God, we're so thankful for all the blessings that you've given us, thankful for this time that we had here together. We need your wisdom as we shepherd our children in our families and here as a congregation. Pray that you will help us to guide them in the way in which you've called all of us, to live faithfully and to walk on the path that you set before us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.